I'm Diana Taylor, and I'm from the University of California, San Francisco School of Nursing and Bixby Center for Global Reproductive Health. And I am the moderator for the session. And in this session presentation, my colleagues and I discuss the role of public health professionals in achieving national health goals to reduce unintended pregnancy. And we propose a comprehensive evidence-based public health framework to reduce unintended pregnancy in which primary, secondary, and tertiary prevention measures are implemented and evaluated for effectiveness in culturally diverse populations, compiled into nationally supported clinical guidelines, and incorporated into standard competencies for public health and primary care professionals. At least that's our wish. And such an approach has been effective for other national health goals in the U.S. and globally. But first I want to briefly introduce changes in our panel. Unfortunately, two of our presenters were stuck and stranded on their way here from Boston. And so Kathy Simmons and Joyce Capiello from the Reproductive Options Education Consortium were unable to get out of Boston. And they have been involved in an innovative program of the Abortion Access Project to address gaps in reproductive options curriculum so that nursing graduates are prepared to provide quality and comprehensive sexual and reproductive health. Both are nurses and faculty at the University of New Hampshire and at Massachusetts General Hospital Institute for the Health Professions in Boston. Amy Levi and I will be presenting for Kathy Simmons and Joyce Capiello. Dr. Levi holds an endowed chair in midwifery at the University of New Mexico and has been instrumental in the implementation of community-based programs that align education and practice in women's health, midwifery, and now sexual and reproductive health. And then Angel James, a midwife and pre-doctoral student here at UCSF, is studying factors related to repeat unintended pregnancies and will be presenting in the place of Amy Levi, who will be presenting for Kathy Simmons. And then Amy will be presenting for Kathy and on our proposed public health framework for primary, secondary, and tertiary prevention and more specifics about how that might be integrated and aligned within public health practice and primary care. And then Monica McLemore, who will be herself today, will end our session with a focus on putting these prevention strategies and models into practice, and also posing questions to you about how we are proposing to implement these and to get your feedback about creating the evidence for practice beyond the usual areas of clinical care. We ask that you hold your questions until the end. We hope to provide plenty of time for that. So now I'm going to switch gears and become Joyce Capiello, and I hope you'll bear with me that I just received this presentation last night, and so I'll try to provide to provide this as Dr. Capiello would like us to. So, in this presentation, I'll be framing the unintended pregnancy prevention within global and WHO model and goals, and then how it's been implemented within the UK, where practice, education, standards, and competencies for education and credentialing are aligned under a National Health Service. So in 2005, the WHO expanded the definition of sexual and reproductive health from maternal child health, contraception, and infections to one of that's based on primary health care and a comprehensive approach to sexual and reproductive health across the lifespan with an emphasis on human rights and delivered within a system of public health and primary care. And this is based on the expansion of the Millennium Development Goals. And although these are really, these eight Millennium Goals are very critical and important and do focus on gender equality and empowerment of women and girls, that they sexual and reproductive health is buried and is not well specified within the Millennium Goals. But a footnote was added to the Millennium Goals from the a group out of the WHO Reproductive Health Research Department that really makes reproductive and sexual health an integral part of national planning and budgeting and built on a system of public health and primary care. And so with the intent that to achieve universal access to reproductive health by 2015 and integrated within the Millennium Goals. Well, what does this really mean? So that under the WHO, there are standards. There are six standards and outcomes of sexual and reproductive health, which includes pregnancy care, family planning, as well as infertility services, focusing on unplanned pregnancy, eliminating unsafe abortion, and focused on sexually transmitted infections, and adding more than just reducing sexual dysfunction is really promoting sexual health. So sexual health promotion becomes a major component and standard within within this WHO model, and then increasing evaluation, research, and program development. Also, that you can have standards, but if you don't have competent health professionals to provide those or a competent reproductive health workforce, that that's only part of the picture are the standards. And so within the standards of sexual and reproductive health as proposed by the WHO, that there is more than just attitudes. It's a focus on ethics and human rights within a integrated not just clinical care, but also integrated within a system of public health. And then there are general and specific competencies for public health professionals and primary care providers. And with the, with overall outcomes for how this would happen, and then policies to support the education, which has been the rate-limiting factor more recently, because you, if you don't, as I said, without without capacity, the workforce capacity, then those standards will be left unimplemented. So we don't have to reinvent the wheel. That there's a model in the UK that where they have, for the past 10 years, had a system of aligning sexual and reproductive health standards built on based on the WHO model and aligning education and core competencies for all primary care and public health providers in the UK. And then also a credentialing system that is also implemented at the national health system level. So a little bit about this UK system, that they use the definition sexual reproductive health as proposed by the WHO, that it's care provided to men and women and across the lifespan with a special emphasis on adolescents. And what's different than our system is that it's coordinated within a system of primary care and public health services. Across the lifespan with a special emphasis on adolescents. And what's different then is coordinated as well. And it's established for nurses, public health nurses, advanced practice nurses, midwives, and primary care physicians working in the National Health Service. These are the 10 components that and competencies for education, training, and credentialing within what they call specialty sexual and reproductive health. But it's really it's different than the way we talk about specialization. It's really a component of public health and primary care that all you know, nurses, healthcare workers and primary care physicians in the UK will become competent in. Now, for instance, public health nurses and clinically based nurses might only take part of these modules and be credentialed in part of these modules, but at least within the basic skills within contraception, within unplanned pregnancy care, along with pregnancy care, that it's a combined system. So, and then common problems of women in GYN, and then assessment, not management, of specialty gynecology problems such as infertility and perhaps urogenital problems that are more advanced that would go to a specialist, a true specialist in OBGYN. Sexual health promotion is also the basic component that all of these clinicians become competent in. And this was an example that Joyce wanted to focus on in terms of how then, within some of the major gaps within our system, that abortion care has been specified not only at the National Health Service level for all primary care providers and public health professionals, but also by each of the national provider groups, the Royal College of Nurses and the Royal College of OBGYNs, have worked together to really expand and further specify the practice and the education in abortion care. So this again could act as a model for those of us in the U.S. So where are we here in the U.S. Unfortunately, not as far as our colleagues and our compatriots in the UK and other national health services like Canada and other parts of Europe and Scandinavia. That unintended pregnancy rate remains relatively unchanged for the last 20 years, and we've made anemic recommendations under Healthy People 2020 of only about a 5% improvement. I think Angel and Amy will be talking a little bit more about this. And then also reducing some of the other benchmarks. And you see that we're siloed also within our system. We don't have a comprehensive set of goals for sexual and reproductive health as they do in the UK and the WHO. And then the demand, we were likely to see an increased demand for sexual and reproductive health services under the Affordable Care Act. We have a decline in the workforce, both in terms of those clinicians and public health professionals who are competent in providing sexual and reproductive health care within public health and primary care. And then we have an increased need for more primary care providers under the Affordable Care Act. But they, again, there are no... there's no consensus on what are the core competencies for these primary care professionals. So our challenge is that to meet these challenges is to define unintended pregnancy prevention as a public health and primary care concern, and to develop core competencies in sexual and reproductive health. And there are a few initiatives that are in the stage of development. One is by the Association of Reproductive Health Professionals, which is convening an interprofessional group to increase to develop a blueprint and develop, and with the outcome to improve the skills of health professionals and public health professionals across primary care and public health. And then the Reproductive Options Education Initiative that Joyce Capiello heads up in developing unintended pregnancy prevention core competencies in nursing. And then there are some other professions and other groups, initiatives that you'll hear a little bit more about momentarily. So you have some references, then these are available online. And now I want to introduce not Amy Levi, but Angel James. Thank you very much.
Hi, I'm Angel James. I'm a pre-doctoral student at the University of California, San Francisco, and I'm doing this presentation for one of my mentors, Dr. Levi. So we're going to talk a little bit about the framework. I want to introduce it. I want to talk a little bit about how to apply it and offer some interventions that address unintended pregnancy at the primary, secondary, and tertiary level. So unintended pregnancy in the United States is a term that's often used interchangeably with unplanned pregnancy, and we usually divide it into mistimed pregnancies or pregnancies that occur earlier than a woman desired, or unwanted pregnancies that occur when she didn't want children at all or didn't want any more children. In the U.S., the percentage of unintended pregnancies, or the rate, is 49%, higher than 48, and it's been there for a while. The most vulnerable populations, or women at the highest risk, are between the ages of 18 and 24, poor women, cohabiting women, and women of color. Pregnancy outcomes for unintended pregnancies include increased morbidities and mortalities. Low birth weight is one of them. So when we're talking about this framework, I don't mean settings. I'm not talking about care settings. I'm talking about prevention levels. So we're going to talk about primary prevention, secondary prevention, and tertiary prevention. And these are terms that most people in medical professions are used to, and so we're applying them to a topic that they haven't been used with in the past. So the prevention, or primary prevention of any condition, is to prevent it from occurring at all. So it's often immunization, screening. In this case, it would be interventions that would be aimed at preventing an unintended pregnancy from occurring. Some of the options would be public health messaging, community health education, the incorporation of sexual and reproductive health into primary care, which doesn't happen as well as it should in the U.S., access to emergency contraception services in general, and early pregnancy diagnosis and screening for unintended pregnancies. Secondary prevention would be, in general, the prevention of allowing a condition to progress. When we're applying this to unintended pregnancy, we're trying to make sure that once an unintended pregnancy has occurred, a woman is allowed to explore all of her options. Often this is applied to chronic disease management, which you can think of unintended pregnancy as a chronic disease. Women are attempting to prevent it for much of their lifespan. Exercise, diet, interventions are things that we talk about in general with primary or secondary prevention, and it is preventing the advancement. So for pregnancy, unintended pregnancy, this would be emergency contraception. So after an act of intercourse has occurred that could lead to an unintended pregnancy, screening for pregnancy loss or ectopic pregnancy early so that we can prevent the negative health sequelae from those. Pregnancy options counseling that's inclusive and includes early abortion services and options. Early abortion care that's coordinated so women are able to get to providers early and easily. Adoption and prenatal care referrals. Tertiary prevention is to prevent a condition from worsening or becoming very, very severe. Disease treatment, continued screening for things that occur comorbidly. For unintended pregnancy, this would be late-term unintended pregnancy support for women who are diagnosed with an unintended pregnancy later in their gestation, still offering their options for pregnancy termination, helping them to coordinate that care and get the services that they need, or if they continue their pregnancy and parenting support. And that's the overview. I'm going to open it up for Amy.
So I'm going to drill down a little bit and talk about very specifically how to use this public health framework in the context of health profession education and practice. So I'm going to continue to refer to this public health model and talk about how in the health professions we can execute the efforts to reduce unintended pregnancy and talk about how to integrate the prevention into the education for health professions. So I have a little disclaimer in addition to the fact that none of us have financial support for this presentation, that I didn't look at Kathy's slides before they got submitted. So I saw that in the inability of the United States to reduce unintended pregnancy from 51 to 56%, it's really a 5% improvement. But obviously, we're not going in the direction that one would expect, given that there are some public health efforts to increase contraceptive use. Certainly abstinence-only education that's been integrated into health education across the lifespan. So clearly we're not hitting our 2010 objectives, and we're not doing such a great job of hitting the 2020 healthy people objectives either. So we do have a system-wide failure. We're not coordinating care to populations at risk for unintended pregnancy. Just telling you things you already know. There's a general fragmentation of healthcare services. Not surprisingly, we are living in an incredibly contentious era of politicization of reproductive health. There is limited sexual health education, and truly there is a lack of a coordinated system of clinical guidelines, competencies, or strategies, as Dr. Taylor mentioned early on. And there are efforts to overcome that, but we have quite a long time of ignoring this as a public health problem. So we need to really start to look towards how we're going to systematically include unintended pregnancy and care in health professional education. We know that certainly physician providers don't get consistent and accurate knowledge about contraception. And obviously, this would have an impact on their ability to prevent unintended pregnancies. As we look towards an increase in public health issues that are being lumped into primary care with the implementation of the Affordable Care Act, this seems to fall off most people's radar screen. And we know that this lack of addressing addressing unintended pregnancy within the context of primary health care is one of the things that's going to contribute to this problem. And why don't healthcare providers provide information about unintended pregnancy prevention? Well, we know from prescribing practices that there's a lot of misinformation that's out there about, for instance, intrauterine contraceptives. I changed locations professionally, and one of my former patients called me and said, my current provider says I should have my IUD taken out because I have a mitral valve prolapse history. And I had put the IUD in, so of course I was a little stunned that this recommendation was being made to my patient, but she was in another state, and that was the standard of care there. If you have a mitral valve prolapse, you can't have an IUD. Clearly, this kind of misinformation is leading people to make decisions that are increasing their risk for unintended pregnancy. So I think that a new frontier in this is the use of IUDs for nulliparous women. Long-acting contraceptives are not being distributed as widely as they might be because there just isn't adequate information out there about who's appropriate for this kind of contraception. So how do health professionals learn about unintended pregnancy care? Well, we know that in medicine and nursing, we're just beginning to look at competency-based medical education, what I would like to call clinical education. And there's always going to be challenges to accepting and implementing this kind of competency-based education. But this is a fairly recent occurrence in clinical education at both the pre-licensure and licensure levels, post-licensure levels. And as long as we're not completely embracing sexual and reproductive health within the context of these competency-based educational modalities, we're missing the boat. Already, genetics and geriatrics have adopted this as a way to ensure that that content is being integrated into curricula in nursing and medicine. Well, we know that there isn't a lot of literature out there about
introducing sexual and reproductive health. There aren't a lot of models. Most studies are in medicine, including family practice. Some focus on residencies. We know that there are more and more fellowships focused on family planning. But the review of literature shows us that once people start talking about unintended pregnancy, they lapse into talking about abortion. And even abortion doesn't have much place in undergraduate medical education or nursing. It's mostly anecdotal evidence that shows us where this has been incorporated into medical and nursing literature, but it's the uptake into generalized curriculum and certainly competency-based models of education is very slow. In 2001, the Health Research and Services Administration produced a report addressing women's health in the baccalaureate nursing school curriculum, and 98% of respondents said that they did include contraception, fertility management, intended and unintended pregnancy, but 39% addressed lesbian health issues. If we're talking about sexual and reproductive health, we have a long way to go in terms of making our curricula and nursing programs inclusive of all the aspects of sexual and reproductive health that Diana and Angel just addressed. Angel Foster looked at abortion education in nurse practitioner, physician assistant, and certified nurse midwifery program. They all included content on pregnancy options counseling, but the content on aspiration abortion was very limited. When we talk about aspiration abortion, we're also talking about a skill set that includes miscarriage management. And for advanced practice nurses and physician's assistants and nurse midwives who are in outpatient kinds of situations where this particular skill set would be valuable, that only 13% of students have access to that prior to graduation is clearly limiting their ability and experience to provide that kind of skill in their clinical spots after graduation. So even in terms of preconception knowledge, practices regarding folic acid, only half of nurses knew that 50% of pregnancies in the United States are unplanned. If nurses aren't cognizant of the fact that they're dealing with patients who are having unintended pregnancies, clearly we're missing the boat in terms of being able to provide training and skill to people who have very regular interaction with patients about things like use of contraception and family planning. Again, we know that in medical education, there's inconsistent education across primary care specialties. Although family practice residents have this included, and this is the most recent information we have about family practice residents and unintended pregnancy care, not very many of them had experience in cervical cap, diaphragm, or IUD provision, although the numbers of women using cervical caps and diaphragms has diminished, IUD use is increasing very dramatically. My colleague at University of New Mexico, Eve Espy, identified the fact that abortion education is very limited in U.S. medical schools. And more recently, early abortion care and miscarriage management, although within the scope of family medicine, are not within the residency programs to train family practice physicians with these skills. So why does this happen? Well, there's a lot to learn. We know that there's a lot more information out there than 5 years ago about the things that we need to be able to provide in primary care. It's not a priority for curricula. There aren't a lot of faculty who are qualified to teach sexual and reproductive health. And of course, in our political climate, who wants to say that they're teaching about abortion, lest they come home to a charred front lawn. And people want to avoid topics that are controversial, that take a lot of time, and really require a level of self-reflection that we don't often provide time and opportunity for in our clinical training. There are models to promote unintended pregnancy care, prevention, and education within Ryan residency programs. READY programs. These are both programs for physician residency inclusion of sexual and reproductive health. There is a reproductive health and advocacy fellowship available to physicians. There's the Reproductive Health Access Project. Nursing Students for Choice and Medical Students for Choice are raising awareness on their campuses about the degree to which undergraduate and pre-licensure education needs to be inclusive of unintended pregnancy prevention. The Midwest Access Project. There are plenty of opportunities for us to expand who our colleagues can be in trying to address unintended pregnancy at the curricular level. Kathy works at the Massachusetts General Hospital Interprofessional Health Profession? Institute for Health Professions, obviously not my institution, where core content and pregnancy prevention strategies is included. And there's always opportunities for students in clinical simulation, performing values clarification exercises. There's a lecture on caring for women with unintended pregnancies. Because it's a women's health nurse practitioner program and family and adult nurse practitioner program, there's a lot of opportunity to incorporate this, particularly with a champion like Kathy Simmons there. And students have an opt-out opportunity to observe abortion in an abortion setting. And Monica will talk a little bit more about the value of that. So where are we? We know we have international models. We know we have the UK model. The recently published RAND report on workforce for addressing sexual and reproductive health and unintended pregnancy. We have lots of blueprints. We just need to develop the will and interest in extending them into educational and practice models. If we could align pre-licensure sexual and reproductive health education with the WHO goal to incorporate sexual and reproductive health competencies, we might be able to get some foothold. But again, we're in a very complex political environment right now. Hopefully, we'll have more confidence in our ability to move this agenda forward on November 7th. So we're challenged to figure out how are we going to bring this content into our clinical competencies and our educational competencies. Hopefully after the ARHP summit next year, we'll be able to publish some recommendations for being able to do this at the pre-licensure and graduate education levels. So we'll work on developing competencies for promulgation in education and practice arenas. We want to promote alignment of this these competencies in education and to use the public health model as a core principle for unintended pregnancy prevention and care. I'm going to turn it over now to Dr. McLemore, who will talk a little bit about how staff nurses can incorporate unintended pregnancy prevention strategies into their care. Thank you.
I just wanted to just, we're ahead a bit, but I wanted to just focus, I know Kathy wanted to focus on some of the models that exist, at least within unintended pregnancy prevention within the U.S. That were, although siloed and fragmented, that there have been some important contributions. And these are referenced in the list of references at the end of Kathy Simmons' PowerPoint presentation. But the first was the March of Dimes funded initiative on preconception care, and that was in 2003. And Mary Kay Moos, who was the chaired that initiative from the University of North Carolina and a public health nurse, that as part of that, she focused on unintended pregnancy prevention, but it was really a small part of the program, but she did provide some strategies. And Monica's going to talk a little bit more about those. And then in 2006, the March of Dimes initiative was taken up by the CDC, which proposed a very broad set of recommendations as well as strategies for preconception care, which included a reproductive life plan, but much more than that. And it really showed how primary prevention of during the pre and interconceptual phase can really enhance the health of women and families. And so it is a model for primary prevention within for sexual and reproductive health that crosses public health and primary care. Again, they really didn't focus on unintended pregnancy prevention as much as the most of us would like to have had them do. So I just want to give you a little context within the U.S. And now I'll turn it over to Monica.
So I'm really grateful to be able to present with my esteemed colleagues. And you know, it's so awesome to have so many people be here, so I appreciate your time. I want to ground you in the perspective from which I'm coming from, because it's a little different from them. They are advanced practice nurses by training, in addition to becoming or being nurse scientists. And I actually, my master's is in public health, and I work as a staff nurse. And so my perspective is really grounded in the largest workforce, staff nurses who are currently working, who can really be engaged in a way to help us sort of implement not only the awesome model that we've heard about from Dr. Taylor, Dr. Levy, and from Angel, but also how can we really use this current, existing, changing structure to really put us on a good path to make sure that unintended pregnancy prevention is really grounded in the current nursing workforce. So that's the perspective from which I'm coming from. I'm going to try and give you not only an overview of what's currently sort of happening in the U.S., but also how we might think differently. And I want you to start thinking about questions, ideas, models, because we've been trying to save a lot of time towards the end of our presentation to really engage in a conversation. I have some questions to sort of start you thinking, but I really hope that you'll start to really think about how we can really actualize this, given that the train's sort of already left the station. So let's think about discussing the roadmap of unintended pregnancy prevention from a staff nurse perspective to really implement women's preventative health services components under the Affordable Care Act. And let's also really start to think about some innovative strategies to provide comprehensive sexual and reproductive health services. So as we all know, on August 1st, 2012, the Clinical Preventive Women's Health Services recommendations went live, and the Affordable Care Act was upheld by the Supreme Court. Here in California, SB 2348 was signed, and it really clarifies the role of staff RNs working within a family planning context. And basically what it says is it makes birth control more widely accessible by authorizing registered nurses to dispense birth control under the standardized procedure. Now, one of the deals that was made as part of this law was for every 3 years that a woman who is of reproductive age that sees a nurse to have her hormonal contraception renewed over those 3 years of time would see a clinician, either an advanced practice nurse or a physician, so that there would remain that continuity of care, but could see an RN, a staff nurse, to be able to have those hormonal contraceptives. And this was sponsored by the Family Planning Council and Planned Parenthood. And so we need to sort of really start to think about what's existing in terms of really implementing this. And there are some things that I'm going to talk about in a couple of other slides. But the question really is, how can we engage the current nursing workforce to implement these clinical preventative women's health services, and more specifically, to have an active role in unintended pregnancy prevention efforts? We have some current written protocols, and we have institutions that are currently providing pieces of this. So at Kaiser Permanente, huge health maintenance organization, they have sites, I believe, in 10 separate states. They have triage nurses and telephone advice protocols that allow for the initiation of hormonal contraception under standardized protocols. And this works within their system only. But they are able to start women on contraception who meet certain criteria. At Planned Parenthood, they currently have HOPE visits with staff RNs within their health centers, HOPE standing for hormonal options without pelvic exams, to really take away sort of the barriers to allow nurses to be able to participate in the dispensing of hormonal contraception. And again, SB 2348 was modeled after the Planned Parenthood model of care and was co-sponsored by the Planned Parenthood Federations of America. In family medicine, the one key question initiative was passed in Oregon by the American Academy of Family Physicians in a resolution for 2012 and 2013. And the question is that all family practice practitioners will ask women of reproductive age, would you like to become pregnant in the next year? And having an open-ended question allows women to answer that question yes or no, and to open a conversation with family practice physicians to be able to refer, intervene, and be able to manage women with appropriate services based on their response to this question. And so the entire academy embraced asking this question during their visits to all women of reproductive age, regardless of why they are coming in for their visit. And we're looking for data to come out of that initiative in 2014. So there are several factors that are sort of impacting implementation of why staff nurses have been able to provide unintended pregnancy prevention interventions. There are questions around the educational needs of those nurses, certification, advanced education, and can nurses really do this work under standardized protocols, policies, and procedures? How will objection be assessed and managed? And how do we really fit nursing into these public health models? I'm going to stop here for a minute because I do want to grab my notes. I see that they're not on these slides regarding the MOOS model as well as the unintended pregnancy prevention model, so apologies for this. I do want to talk a little bit about primary prevention for unintended pregnancy. So the MOOS model that Dr. Taylor was talking about that came out in 2003, sponsored by funding from the March of Dimes, really had four key questions. And I'm going to go through these slowly since I don't have the slides for them. And it's referenced in an article in the reference list that you'll have. And those four key questions are, number one, how many children, if any, do you hope to have? And I'll repeat that. How many children, if any, do you hope to have? Question number two, how long would you like to wait until you become pregnant again? And that's if they've been pregnant before, obviously. But the question again, how long would you like to wait until you become pregnant? Again, in parentheses. Question number three, what do you plan to do to delay becoming pregnant until then? Again, what do you plan to do to delay becoming pregnant until then? And the final question, number four, what can I do to help you achieve your plan? And again, this is referenced in an article that was published not only in the Journal of Obstetrics and Neonatal Nursing, but it's also referenced on the Centers for Disease website. And these questions are in the reference list of these slides. The preconception care guidelines, again, the report was from the March of Dimes, and the CDC adopted those guidelines, and that website also additionally is under the reference list that you'll see at the end of the slides. So Angel presented a model of unintended pregnancy prevention with primary, secondary, and tertiary prevention suggestions and interventions. I'm going to sort of take that model and ask what the current nursing workforce could easily do in their practice now to work within this model and to utilize it effectively. So under primary prevention strategies, we have educational resources for knowledge about reproduction, education and resources about contraception, access to education and resources for reproductive health concerns. Well, staff nurses already can assess last menstrual period. We already do pregnancy testing. We can begin initial pregnancy option counseling and referrals, and we already consult with advanced practice clinicians and physicians to provide information and support. So I think under primary prevention strategies, it would be very easy to quickly engage staff nurses to be able to do some of these things in a more systematic way, because in some settings, staff nurses are already doing primary prevention. So let me move into secondary prevention strategies. And there's some conversation that we probably should move the first bullet point, access to and understanding emergency contraception, to primary prevention. But staff nurses can assess if women are currently eligible for emergency contraception, asking simple questions about their last sex act, whether or not it was unprotected, really find out if they're in the window for effective emergency contraception provision, and can obtain prescriptions for women or call in prescriptions for women under standardized protocols or in consultation with advanced practice clinicians and physicians. These are things that every staff nurse can and should be able to do. Access to and understanding of early elective abortion procedures, staff nurses can currently make referrals and provide women with clinic information for medication and early surgical abortion. And staff nurses can provide moderate sedation recovery room care for women having early surgical abortions. So there are nurses who are already fulfilling these roles as well. In tertiary prevention strategies, if women decide that they have acceptance of an unplanned or unintended pregnancy, staff nurses can provide prenatal intake visits and patient education. Staff nurses can also schedule for first prenatal appointments and facilitate prenatal vitamins and other types of support appointments. And if patients decide that acceptance of an unplanned or an unintended pregnancy is not what they feel comfortable choosing, staff nurses can refer for abortion services, provide moderate sedation, interoperative and recovery room care and assessment, and post-abortion care as well. So these are things well within the scope of practice of staff nurses. In summary, we have a framework for unintended pregnancy prevention. We have a public health model that's comprehensive, is easily understood. And like Dr. Levi said, we are lacking political will and we're really lacking accountability, particularly engaging in our staff nurses. We have a summary of unintended pregnancy competencies and knowledge needs from some of our colleagues in the UK and in Canada, as Dr. Taylor suggested. We need clarification of role and practice, and here is where standardized protocols really allow for staff nurses to be able to provide this comprehensively across practice areas. But we also need champions to move forward with the implementation of these strategies. So I'm not going to try and read this. The resources and references are there, and I'm going to start. I'd like to transition us to really beginning to have a panel discussion, and we'd like to answer some questions that you have. So, question number one: are there any additional suggestions as to how to implement unintended pregnancy prevention with our current nursing workforce? How do we disseminate new knowledge of unintended pregnancy prevention to currently working clinical nurses? And what is the role of our professional organizations, including APHA, in the implementation of these models? So we'll take any questions that we have, and I guess the easiest way is to show by hand. I see we have two questions already. And then we're really going to try to facilitate a discussion. So in the back, and then we'll have Iffy in the front, and then we'll have. And try to speak loudly, because otherwise we'll have to bring a mic around.
Hi, Betty.
And Betty, could you also introduce your role at on the Institute of Medicine Standing Committee for Family Planning?
Services in clinics around the country, so the federal program, and it's always been
Thanks for your comments. The model that we propose using a public health framework for primary, secondary, and tertiary prevention of unintended pregnancy doesn't dismiss the Title X advances and the federal advances. Unfortunately, what we've tried to do is turn that model on its head rather than having Title X from the top down, is really think about how the standards and certainly the training standards that have been implemented on a very diminished Title X training program model could be integrated. So it's an attempt to really take the best of Title X and make it much more visible within a broader public health and primary care model. So, you know, we're giving you the highlights, but certainly your comments are really critical to expansion. I think we had one question over there, and then. You brought up a really important point. Is anyone here from South Carolina? Oh, good. Because maybe that was going to be your question. But for the last 15 years, there's been a model, a team-based model of, it's a statewide system of public health nurse practitioner, and nurse midwife teams that to implement public health goals that involve maternal child health, child health, and so they bring the silos together in terms of providing both public health services and clinical care services. So would you like to introduce yourself and talk a little bit about your program?
Huh? advice as nurse practitioners. It's very innovative. I've got a long list of people in South Carolina that I've trained that have responded. We call it a genius approach, and I would love to share it with the world.
Well, the model is described within a recent RAND report on the reproductive health workforce, and I was a co-author and co-investigator of that study, and I believe that it's on one of the references, but I'm happy to share it with you all. But it gets back to Ife's question about who's in charge. It was really the public health nurses who are the core, the glue, that really bring in the population health as well as public health strategies that engage these women and engage them into clinical care, particularly within unintended pregnancy prevention. And you can see the excitement of someone who's been working in the in the program. So thank you so much. You can go to it's the South Carolina Department of Public Health website, and it's on that website. And Beth DeSantis, DeSantis, is the director of that program in the South Carolina Department of Public Health. And I think I'll get you in a minute, and then you're up next. Thank you. Kate? Could you stand up so people can hear? Midwifery care, home and birth midwifery care. And I'm thinking about home
Go ahead, because I'm going to say something similar. Obvious. I'm going to ask if other people have answers to Kate's question, but specifically to whether the context of the MOOS questions, because I think this is an important question. You know, there in the CDC guidelines and in her publication, she never really used setting as where these questions should or should not be broached or asked. But within a nursing context, what you said totally makes sense. And so really engaging, you know, as Iffy said, our public health nurses, our home health nurses here in San Francisco, we're lucky that the Nurse Family Partnership has come here, and our inpatient perinatal clinical nurse specialist, Ocean Berg, who was supposed to be here this morning, is now working in that program. And she and I are having conversations about whether or not it makes more sense to approach moms at home under the umbrella of the Nurse Family Partnership as opposed to having them leave the acute care hospital where they had their birth. Where should that conversation take place? But to answer your question specifically around the MOOS questions, she never stated where or how or when those questions should be asked, except that where appropriate deemed as the clinician. There was never any site-specific incidents around.
Yeah, but within the CDC guidelines and the March of Dimes guidelines, this is embedded within sexual health promotion generally. But how that then gets enacted, you know, we tend to just jump to the unintended pregnancy prevention rather than, but I think within a context of preconception or interconception care, and, you know, there's problems with that term also, because it assumes that you're going to be concepting at some point, but that the sexual health promotion and focusing on healthy sex is really the first step. So does anyone have other comments related to Kate's question about this integration of sex education, sexual health promotion, and unintended pregnancy prevention? I think you had your hand up there. Thank you. Could you introduce yourself?
That's a great contribution to the conversation. I was just going to make a comment. As the Affordable Care Act is integrating more preventive health services that are not going to have extra charges related to them for patients, I think that obviously this is key to the conversation about how to access those services. I also think it's important for providers and people in the position of creating clinical programs to be very conscious of how that six-week postpartum visit is sometimes sent to the family planning clinic. That if there's no reimbursement within a prenatal package or a birth delivery package, pregnancy package, that those patients may be seen in a completely different setting. And so it's really important for us to think about the continuity of care that's getting lost for some of the women who are in those pregnancy programs and never do go back to their pregnancy provider for a six-week visit. So we have to really, again, reinforce the idea that this sexual and reproductive health conversation is part of primary care, because we've been really used to sequestering maternal child health care outside of primary care. We have specialists, you know, we have OBGYNs and midwives. And I think part of our intention in this prevention model is to extend the possible providers for and the people who will interact with women and their families around these issues. So thank you for pointing that out. The person in the back, I think, was the next person with a comment. Thank you, and let's hope that Title X will be able to continue in 2013. Great, thank you so much for letting us know about that. Yeah.
Where is that place? How the content?
It's a great question. I'm wondering if anybody, Loma Linda, if anybody in the audience has any ideas about that?
Everywhere.
I think that is the answer. Everywhere. Everywhere. Because we get a little stuck in gender-specific health. We get a little stuck in maternal child health. I've recently started teaching in a college of nursing that has a concept-based curriculum. And so I'm madly tearing it apart, looking for where we can start talking about issues of sexual and reproductive health. And the answer is everywhere. That obviously conception has to do with childbearing years, but how we interact with our children around sexual education issues and how we deal with our elders around sexual health needs, it's everywhere. And we have really kept it in the closet in so many ways. And of course, in our highly politically charged environment, we've really changed the conversation because it's so tied up with people's emotions. I would encourage you all to look at a great piece that Gary Wills wrote in the LA Times week before last, I think it is now, about what religion has to say about abortion. And it's not a religious question, and it's not so much about abortion, but what he really talks about is how belief and moral values are couched in what people practice as religion. And I think it's really important for us when we're talking about health practices, abortion is just one of many, many health practices, to really expand the conversation about what humans believe about their own well-being. Yeah. Yeah, great. Thank you for that. Yeah.
Again, because I would turn to international models more than in the United States. However, there are wonderful programs for adolescents that could then be implemented within the primary and secondary prevention framework that we outline. So again, it's a matter of integration and using best practices that are implemented using the WHO definition of sexual and reproductive health. And then also within the UK and Canada and Scandinavian national health systems, that they then can, those frameworks can inform us about how you can align both practice and education within within a national framework. But also looking to the Massachusetts, the implementation of the Massachusetts model, which of course Mitt Romney doesn't want us to associate with him, but there are a couple of within the RAND the RAND Corporation did the evaluation of the Massachusetts model and the implementation, and they showed how within integrated health systems that is specifically related to adolescent health and to the broader range of problems that are particular to adolescents, but also within for family planning and STD prevention, certainly the standards that are proposed by the Office of Population Affairs and Title X programs, that using a system of electronic health records and communication between systems and healthcare providers, that outcomes were much better for adolescents after this after the insurance model then went into effect in Massachusetts. So I would direct you to some of the publications, and if you give me your card, I'll also send you some specific references for that. Also, if anyone else has some wants to talk about models of adolescent care within their own states or systems, we welcome your comments. Okay, it looks like we're winding down. So what I'd since we don't have all of the references that we described, if people want to either give me their cards or give me their emails, I'll send you some of the specific references that we that aren't on our reference list of the PowerPoints. So thank you very much.